failing public schools, backpacks full of cash, leaving communities that need it? What kind of choice is that? Not a good one. It's time to bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
Choice? You can't handle choice. In the movie Waiting for Superman, we were deluged with the magic of charters, choice, and vouchers. They were the silver bullets for our, quote, failing public schools. The movie was so successful, even Oprah turned on public school teachers and gifted millions of dollars to choice alternatives. Since then, what do we know? Well, let's be honest. Even at the time of the movie, we, that would be educated educators, knew that charters, vouchers, and the choice movement was nothing more than a concerted targeting of public school budgets and had nothing to do with helping children escape, quote, failing public schools. However, knowledge never seems to trump stupid ideas, and choice advocates flying high on the propaganda machine that was Waiting for Superman pushed harder and managed to siphon billions of dollars away from public schools while building a network of choice alternatives. Now, 7 years after, what do we know? Or maybe better yet, what do the supporters of choice alternatives know? Well, how about this? Superman is just some silly charlatan dressed in pajamas and underwear, suffering from delusions of grandeur. That's right, according to research, some of it even conducted by supporters of choice, the academic performance of these students is horrendous. According to Kevin Carey of the New York Times, quote, researchers examined an Indiana voucher program and found voucher students who transfer to private schools experience significant losses in achievement. How about this? In Louisiana, public elementary school students who started at the 50th percentile in math and then used the voucher to transfer to a private school dropped to the 26th percentile. And finally, the conservative think tank and supporter of choice, Thomas B. Fordham Institute, in their research concluded students who use vouchers to attend private schools have fared worse academically compared to their closely matched peers attending public schools. Just how damaging is this? Well, according to Martin West, a professor at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, the negative effects are, quote, the largest in the history of American education research. So if you're still waiting for Superman and watching Oprah, you might want to get the hell out of the phone booth and change the channel. It seems that taking public school dollars, you know, those backpacks full of cash from school to school, actually harms children. How's that for a choice? So if you're still waiting for Superman and watching Oprah, you might want to get the hell out of the phone booth and change the channel. It seems that taking public school dollars, you know, those backpacks full of cash from school to school, actually harms children. And there's your choice. Coming up, Rebel Teacher talks choice and another round of the schools our children deserve.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
Between the two of them, they have produced, written, and directed many film documentaries over the years, including Mega Mall and School, the Story of American Public Education, which was narrated by Meryl Streep. Now they are about to release Backpack Full of Cash, a new documentary narrated by Matt Damon. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Sarah Mondale and Vera Arano.
Thank you. We're pleased to be here.
I want a backpack full of cash. I'm sure everybody does. What's the title?
Well, we chose that title because we interviewed a woman from the Center for Education Reform. She's actually the former director, a woman named Jeannie Allen, at a conference of Jeb Bush-chaired it's a big annual summit of basically self-described reformers who want to see more choice and more market-based policies in education. And Jeannie Allen said in her interview, which is in the film, that she believed that every child should have a backpack full of cash, meaning his or her share of public money, public education money, that they should be able to take to the school of their choice. And schools should compete or vie for the privilege of having that child come and that backpack turned over to them. So basically, we thought, wow, that is a great image for the whole choice argument, basically. It's this idea called portability. Some people call it portability, and that is behind the choice argument or the choice philosophy that, the new Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, is now a champion of. This idea that students should not go to the community-controlled, democratically run neighborhood public school, but should be able to take their share of money in the form of a voucher sometimes, or take that money and go to a charter school, a voucher school, private school, religious school, home, use it for homeschooling, online schooling, whatever they choose. So we felt like it just summed up perfectly the contrast between the idea of community-based, democratically controlled public school and this other notion,
right,
which, the backpack.
Yeah, I love some of the animation, because you just see these little kid, you know, has this backpack full of cash and going from school to school. And but the reality, I think, that I like, that comes across finally by using this image is that backpack full of cash is actually taxpayer dollars that the student can then take around with them and go anywhere they want. And in the movie, you really hit three big issues. You look at charters, you look at vouchers, and you would look at then cyber schools. These are all ways then that the student can use their backpack full of cash and get away from the public school by hitting each of those. Does that sound right?
That seems about right. And what we show in the film, what we're looking at really is our touchstone is the public schools. Because this is already playing out in many cities, including Milwaukee, which has the longest running voucher program in the country, Philadelphia, which we filmed a lot in, which has 86 charter schools, or did at the time when we were filming. We were looking at how these impact the public schools. How are these programs, which are already really have been underway for years now, what's the impact on the public schools and especially on the most vulnerable children in those public schools? So that was the goal of the film, was to find out from their perspective how these market-based reforms are playing out.
Yeah, so the film takes us actually from Philadelphia to New Orleans to multiple places, but the main setting though is in South Philadelphia, and the high school is kind of this backdrop here to show what happens when a backpack full of cash essentially leaves and goes other places and the effects of that on a local public school. What led you to that direction, to that high school?
South Philadelphia was recommended to us, and its wonderful principal, Otis Hackney, in the summer of 2013, when we were scouting around in Philadelphia, meeting parents and activists and school leaders, and people told us that he had done an incredible job of turning that school around, which had experienced some violence, and that it was making real progress and improvement. And it's an extremely diverse school, as you can see in the film, and it has a legendary history in that neighborhood. And so that was how we found the school.
Right. I mean, we say in the film, and we show some of the famous graduates from that one high school, Marian Anderson, the wonderful singer, opera singer, Chubby Checker,
right.
Frankie Avalon. There are others, too, that we didn't name, but it's amazing that they all came out of that one school. But then when you look at it, every big city has at least one high school like that. mm-hmm. where there are just a incredible list of famous graduates in every big city.
Yeah, we interviewed a teacher in Seattle from Garfield High School in the home to Jimi Hendrix, and I forget how many different people that came out of Garfield High School in Seattle. You're right, and the same attack is going on in this high school. Why are we attacking these amazing city institutions that have served so many people so well for so many years?
Well, one of the reasons that we also chose South Philly was that that high school to focus on was because underfunding and privatization often go hand in hand, and this school was just kind of to us symbolic of this lack of funding, and that was hitting the Philly schools very, very hard that year when we filmed. They were in crisis, really on the brink of financial collapse, the whole district. So that was one thing. They were really suffering from a lack of resources, mm-hmm. and they had kids with extremely high needs at the same time. So they just had, two counselors for 1,000 students. They had no music in this school, which had produced these famous musicians and singers and so on. They had no art. They were really having a very tough time that year, and Otis Hackney, the principal, was trying to balance really skimpy resources, and so the question was, were they even going to make it through the year? And the other reason that school was important in our film is that this was a year after the Philadelphia schools had closed 24 public schools. That was in June, that summer before we filmed. It was in June of 2013. The district felt that for reasons of lack of enrollment, which we point out was also because of competition from the huge number of charter schools that were opening and drawing kids and getting funding and doing new construction, and the many public schools were their enrollment was down, and so the district ended up closing 24 public schools, and it was around the time when Chicago closed almost 50.
Right.
So this has been going on in every city, and we are trying to show that it's related to the opening of the charter schools. It's not by chance that this is happening. And kids are going from point A to point B. They're not disappearing.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that really comes out that's clear again. And this is why I think the film is going to be wonderful for more and more people. And I use the phrase here on Busted Pencils, my neighbor, people who aren't teachers, who aren't public school. This film kind of points out finally, for me, the reality of when you say that backpack full of cash and then a cash-strapped school already. So in other words, devastating budget cuts to the school. And then every student that then leaves that school for, quote, a charter school, or you takes that voucher, goes to a religious private school or goes to a cyber school, that money then also leaves that school. So we're hacking the budget of the schools. We're then sending children away with their backpack full of cash. And for me, when you talk about the music too, there's the scene of that music room with the cellos and things and the drums just sitting there empty and essentially collecting dust. That is where we need to focus and go, yeah. In one way, I think it's wonderful that he was able to pull off a school year. I think it's immoral and illegal and unbearable that they had to have a high school with a music room that sat like that for an entire school year.
Right, not to mention none of the things that our suburban high schools have, in better funded areas, like a band, an orchestra, a choir, none of those things, because they had no music teacher.
Yeah.
There was basically no music in the school, which really got to me.
Farrah.
It was devastating. It was really... And so few resources, so few counselors, two counselors for the whole school. When you think about kids trying to get ready to go to college, especially kids who don't come from families where the parents have gone to college, how are they going to do that? And it's just a striking contrast to what people in the wealthy or the just the more affluent suburbs are used to seeing and come to expect.
Right, and not only that, but that school, South Philly, had to absorb hundreds of students coming from a nearby school that had closed. And so these kids, hundreds of kids, were coming in their senior year, you know, to start the year off at this school that was underfunded, that had all. And so the principal also had to meld, you know, we don't go into this in the film, but he had the job of kind of melding different student bodies together. That was tough in and of itself.
Right, and there's so many, like I said, there's so many different ways that the illustration of the attack and the privatization of public schools come through in this film. One of the things I was thinking, I want to ask each of you this question and see how you respond to this. I'll go with Vera first. Vera, so my thought was is that what this is that this shows what happens when you wait for Superman.
I think we feel that we believe that we have to do something about this, that citizens have to be informed. That's what we're trying to do with the film, and take action in their own communities, because the inequality, the inequity, the inequality of resources is just so striking. It's not fair.
And Sarah, what do you think? When I say this just tells me what happens when you wait for Superman.
Well, I think that's a good analogy. One of the reasons we made the film, actually, I was a high school teacher and saw Waiting for Superman, and that really made me mad, what I saw in that film, because it seemed like they were saying the public schools are failing. The public schools are dropout factories. They were not even interviewing teachers in that film, or not going inside any public schools, but kind of showing shots of them from the outside. The unions are the problem. Teachers are the problem. Teachers are lazy. And then what is the answer? Charter schools
right.
were presented as a magic bullet. So it was a bit of a propaganda piece. And when you look at the funders of that film, you know, you see who's behind it and who were some of the wealthy, you know, charter supporters. It made me very angry that film was seen by friends of mine who saw it. And, oh, yeah, public schools are really in a mess. You know, and I
right.
was like, wait a minute. No, they're not.
Well, no, they're not. And they are, though, the ones that are, as you point out, with South Philly, who are doing a great job. But it's the result of this idea of romanticizing charters and choice and vouchers, and the reality of what they do to our democratic public schools and the devastation they cause to our most vulnerable students out there. So again, a backpack full of cash, release info and plan. I mean, when can the public see this movie?
Well, we're finishing it next week, actually, and it's going to show at a number of film festivals in April, May, June. That would be Nashville, Washington, D.C., Seattle, Washington. We're going to show it in L.A., in Wisconsin, perhaps this summer. We're talking to groups from around the country. And our website is www.backpackfulofcash.com, and we're going to be posting a list of screenings and upcoming screenings and how to get tickets, how to see it in your area.
And what about you? Go ahead, Vera.
We'd also love it if people go to Backpack Full of Cash, the movie, on Facebook, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and that's how we're keeping people posted about upcoming screenings and our distribution plans and all kinds of press that we get and issues. It's a really interesting Facebook page, actually, because we keep people informed about a lot of related issues and articles and events.
Right. It's not just a Facebook page about Backpack Full of Cash, but it actually captures the most current and up-to-date news. And in fact, the idea that this film is about to be released, as we have installed probably one of the most hostile, unqualified secretaries of education who support everything in this film. I'm, you know, in one way, it's What great timing for you guys so that we can actually have a counter to Betsy DeVos and the insanity that she would like to bestow upon those below her. But the other, and I just want to throw, is the Kickstarter campaign still going too?
The Kickstarter campaign is over. You have to set a pretty short time frame for that, so it was 1 month, but we still have a donate button on our website, and you can link to it from Facebook. And what we now need funds for is to promote the film and to be able to distribute it and keep active on social media and get copies and all that sort of thing so it can be seen widely.
So,
right, to get the film out to the public, that's what we're trying to do, and we're almost done with it, but you actually, we do need money to do that too. We've had an incredible, you know, flood of support for the making of the film, many individual donors, I think over 300 of them, Vera, is that right?
Yeah, I think over 400 plus, as well as our wonderful foundation backers, but it's just been a huge effort that it's taken us years. We started really in 2011. We started filming in 2012, and now here is 2017, and we're just putting the finishing touches on it. So it's been quite a journey.
Well, and it's going to be welcomed by a lot of people, and it's going to inform a lot of people. So I just want Sarah Mondale, Vera Arano, thank you so much for coming on Busted Pencils. Really appreciate the work. And when you're out there, listeners, check it out. Go to their website. Go to the Facebook page. Support this. If you support Busted Pencils, you have to support Backpack Full of Cash. It is the answer to everything that's wrong that's going on the attack on public education. Thank you, Vera. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Now, I wonder if Matt Damon's mom had anything to do with him narrating the documentary Backpack Full of Cash.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
They got Matt from me. Matt doesn't ever forget that I'm his mom, number one. Number two, I don't ask Matt for much. Matt and I are close. We have a relationship based on trust. I've actually told him I won't ask him for things because I don't want to undermine our relationship or have him feel like he has to hide from me because he doesn't want to say no. In general, I don't ask him for anything. So when I do, which has been just a few times counted on one hand, he knows it really means a lot.
My sense of Backpack Full of Cash is that it's the antidote to Waiting for Superman. What does Matt Damon's mom say?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think in many ways it is. I mean, you know, it's very different what's behind it. There was a lot of big money behind Waiting for Superman and a lot of powerful people interested in having that movie be seen because it was really celebrating charter schools and choice. And, you know, this film is really a contradiction to those messages. And I think it's just, you know, harder to get big funders and movie production people behind a film like this because it's not an establishment film. But the messages that it's putting out there are really crucial because it's a very it's a smart and a heartfelt way of showing viewers what the effects of charter schools are on communities, particularly Philadelphia. And you really see what's happening to families and kids' lives and education and education resources as a result of privatization. A lot of people don't understand how charters mm-hmm. are actually taking funds away from public schools because there's all this, you know, propaganda around charters are public schools, they're not taking anything from public schools, but I think you start to see when you see a film like this.
Right, and that's why I made that comment there is that, you know, while Waiting for Superman, you know, as you just said, being backed by tons of people with lots of money who had mm-hmm. an agenda to drive, and the fact that actually it was mostly a propaganda-based movie that didn't have a lot of really facts as much as it had a desire to promote charter schools as an alternative to, quote, failing public schools. What we get, though, in a Backpack Full of Cash, and that's why, for me, it's the antidote to Waiting for Superman, mm-hmm. is because it's not about propaganda. It's not a piece meant to pitch. It actually shows you, as you just said, what happens when you take $5 from a public school, give it to a kid, and send that kid to another school. That $5 leaves that school and goes to that school, but yet that school has to still educate all the other kids, and in fact may educate other kids that are coming in from closed charter schools.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, I like to look at who is behind various projects, like what is the motivation and what are people getting out of it. And I think it's important to notice that who were the people backing Waiting for Superman and what was the agenda driving that film and why did it get into theaters, big theaters, the way it did so quickly. You know, there are big funders behind it. And you look at this film and it's Vera and Sarah who are, you know, citizens interested in having other citizens understand some of these issues around privatization of schools, and they've had to scrounge for money. They've had to work very hard to get funding.
Yeah, they're kickstarting, right? Donating.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I don't think anything in Waiting for Superman went through a Kickstarter campaign and a GoFundMe and you name all the other possible ways.
Right.
You know, it seems to be in one way the kind of the underlying story of public schools anymore, though. If you want to get something out there that's beneficial to the public, it's no one's going to step up and actually make that readily available. But if you're going to step up and downplay or downgrade the public, boy, there's all kind of people willing to throw money at that.
Megaphones waiting for you to say how bad public schools are and how teachers are the problem.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
You can find his writing at rebelteacherblog.com. His latest, The Business of School Choice, is an exclusive at Busted Pencils. Welcome to the show, our activist blogger of the week, Rebel Teacher. Rebel, what's happening?
Good to be here. Thank you.
So check it out. You know, a little bit of a twist here for you. The Business of School Choice. And, you know, I'm looking at this blog and I got to say, if I'm a person who doesn't get it, doesn't really understand, you've probably taken some of, you know, the most complex issues of the choice, charter / you name it movement, and have laid it out in a really nice primer. But then also, as the Rebel does, kind of throws back that social justice hook so that we can come back and talk about equity. But so check it out. Let's just go through it. What if I support vouchers, what am I thinking?
Well, yeah, you support vouchers. If you're a parent and, you know, the way it's laid out, you are thinking, well, the problems in the public school district, you know, the problems at the local school. Maybe if I can get this voucher and go somewhere to a more affluent community, to a better school, I'll be doing right by my children. I'll be doing the right thing, you know, by trying to give them the best education possible.
And that's the line, right? We, you know, hey, get your kid out of the failing public schools. In fact, that you know, we hear the mantra: failing public schools, failing public schools,
right.
Failing public schools. At some point, you as a parent were like, "Holy crap! I didn't even know my kid was in a failing public school." But if they said it is, I guess it is.
Yeah, sir. And that's where it's coming from because, you know, at least there's no available evidence that says that parents feel that their schools, that their local schools are failing. You know, there is no evidence that says, you know, there are all these parents that are upset with their local schools. Parents are generally seen okay with the schools in their community.
Right, yeah. If I Delta Kappan typically reports that, most people say we're happy with our public schools. That's not to say that there aren't some problems with some issues in certain public
problems.
Schools. But, you know, the whole idea of choice, though, let's get into this, though. The idea of choice, to give a child a choice, sounds so, you know, wonderful. Just give them a choice. But, you know, I think you hit pretty hard here, this idea, though. School choice and racism, how does that work?
Well, school choice and racism. Well, if you look at any American institution and you look back far enough and you look deep enough, you'll probably find it in there. But part of it is there are a couple racist assumptions at the root of it, okay, based on this, what do they call it, this cultural deficit model, that that there are problems in these communities, cultural problems.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can just get these kids, these smart kids with these parents that care, out of their communities and into other outside communities, probably more affluent, probably wider communities, you know, where, of course, the education is superior, the teaching is superior, and the general culture of the community is superior. That's one racist assumption that lies beyond, that lies at the root of the entire movement. And then there's also the real world racist results that actually takes funds from these low income communities of color and follows the children to these other communities, leaving the public schools and the low income communities of color basically to languish. So there are actually racist results as a consequence of this, you know, the vouchers and the, you know, the whole school choice movement in general.
So there's two there. I mean, so let's look at the last one you talked about there. This idea, and it's, you know, and I shouldn't say idea. This fact, though, of what you just said, the money follows the child. So if there's a child in a community, and that child leaves that community school for, say, a private school, that money follows the student or that child to the private school, leaving the community public school. However, the community public school still has to teach all the children.
Correct. And not only do they have to teach all the children, they're leaving the children that are left behind. Many of these children aren't going to take special education children or ELL children. And so there are less resources basically there to help the children that are most in need.
Well, and so if we're looking at that from that point of view, it's you know, it's, again, it's amazing why we think about this. But, you know, moving the money with the child moves in. But you hit another point on this, and I want to go back and kind of repeat that again. So the child, a choice child, takes money from the public school, goes to a private school, and not only a private school, but can actually go to a private religious school using taxpayer money. You have issue with that.
I definitely have issue with that. You know, it's also, I mean, arguably it's a violation of the Constitution, one of the most basic tenets of the Constitution, man, the separation of church and state. We're taking public money and giving it to private religious institutions. And, you know, that's the goal. I mean, and especially if you look at the background of, you know, our Secretary of Education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's her background, and that's her goal. That's one of the things that she stands on.
So, so bring it at right at that. I mean, that's the issue we're facing. Betsy DeVos, she's made comments such as, you know, and this might be a slight paraphrase, not a direct quote, but using vouchers as a way of ushering in the quote kingdom of God through public schools. Right.
Oh goodness. Yes.
Well, you know, somebody's gonna say, "Hey, Rebel and Tim, I mean, why you guys got a problem with God and stuff?"
Well, it's not that there's a problem with God, but there's a problem with using public funds to support and to fund it, and also to take money from the most vulnerable students and send it to communities that you know, to communities that already have resources.
Yeah, so let's not poke fun at God, because I don't feel like getting struck down by lightning right now while we're doing this. But, you know, as coming to the, you know, but let's get to the end here. You know, you really talk about something that's truly at the heart of this, and we have to remember the issue of school funding in and of itself, public schools right now. We've never realized a true equitable system to begin with, and you point this out by laying out that, look, we haven't got there to begin with. Throw in this idea of choice, and you, quote, and I'll just use your word, you exacerbate this.
Correct. Right. It can potentially exacerbate everything. It could exacerbate the achievement gap. It can exacerbate the whatever problems that are in the public schools already. By taking funds away from the public school system, it can't help it. It can only hurt.
So the rebel teacher is looking at choice, looking at vouchers, and comes through this all the way from a race-based argument into the whole just general idea of it being an unconstitutional movement. And then we find out that at the end, on top of that, it isn't going to do a damn bit of good for schools and probably will hurt schools. How's that for a conclusion to that blog that you wrote?
That just about fits it. That hits it right on the nail.
Well, so the blog is The Business of School Choice. You can find it. It's an exclusive for Busted Pencils, and we really appreciate that, Rebel Teacher. Rebel Teacher, as always, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for writing. Thank you for, most of all, the continued busting of pencils.
All right. Thank you very much.
He walks from Connecticut to D.C. each year in protest of standardized tests and to prove that children are more than a test score. We are proud to have Jesse the Walking Man Turner's take on that famous Alfie Cohn question. What are the schools our children deserve?
Our children deserve schools without tears, schools that don't just accept them but value them, that understand that creativity and innovation and learning happens at different times, and childhood should be a celebration of life, not a placement into, are you proficient? Are you below proficiency, above proficiency?
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
Time now for our tribute to famous historian and activist Howard Zinn. Here's your moment of zen.
Human beings are not machines, and however powerful the pressure to conform, they sometimes are so moved by what they see as injustice that they dare declare their independence.
My thanks to Sarah and Vera from Backpack Full of Cash, Rebel Teacher, Jesse the Walking Man Turner, and of course Matt's mom. For more info on everything discussed in this episode, log on to BustedPencils.com. Also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.